This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona.
And I'm Emily Thompson from now Wellington, Florida. And you're listening to a special jumping edition of Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network. I have no episode number.
It is November 3rd, episode 1291, brought to you today by S Equestrian and Five Star Bridles. So say it. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning, Horse World.
Oh, my God. It's Tuesday.
It's top-class show jumping at the very best.
Every horse is different, and you've got to be able to understand and read each different horse.
Remember, we're looking for those clears in this round to go forward to the jump-off.
You can't ask for anything more. It's just pure theatre.
And welcome, Emily Thompson from S Equestrian. It is our special jumping edition of Horses in the Morning and one of my favorite episodes of the month. Good morning, Emily.
Oh, good morning, Jamie. Happy to be here. Always love chatting with you every month.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. And we are going to go all over the place. But my gosh, how happy are you to be in Florida right now?
Very happy. It was cold. It was getting really cold up there. And a lot of times I leave like in September and come down, so I waited a little bit, but I didn't tell you this earlier, but when I drove down, you know, last year I got a flat tire at like 2 o'clock in the morning and like on the line of like South Carolina and Georgia, like there's like no man's land. There's nothing going on there. And it was stuck there for actually 2 days, had to order a new tire and everything.
Oh, no.
So, okay, that was last year's extravaganza. This year I had it was a non-event the whole way down. It was fine. I actually stopped off and tried horses with a friend of mine in Virginia, which was great. Get out, stretch your legs, keep going. I get down here. I'm like, I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good. And Eric and I went out to dinner and I got horrible food poisoning, like so bad. I've been on the road for like 30 hours and then I got a nice food poisoning stint. So after that, after I wanted to die and I got better, now I'm very happy and appreciative. It's nice and warm.
I heard it was a little too warm right now, though.
It really is. It's, I mean,
you don't want to complain. Say it.
I don't. Like, I'm cautious, you know. I'm like, I'm for sure take the warm over the cold. But yeah, it's warm. It's really hot. The horses are sweating, and it took everybody a little longer to kind of acclimate. So we'll just take our time. But yeah, it's warm.
So going from the north to the south, you know, I'm in Arizona and it's like the coldest it's been is like 60, you know, and that's at night. And my horses have they pop these winter coats that are just crazy. Now, we don't even have any cold weather. You guys had cold weather already up in New York. Have you body clipped already? Do you blanket? Do you put them under lights? What do you do for the hair coats?
Yeah, some people do all of it. I don't do the lights. I think it's like so much. People say you have to start so early in the year and all year, but it does work. I mean, they don't body clip hardly at all, like once a season, which is incredible for me. I let them stay furry when I'm up there. Generally, when we're about to ship, we're kind of winding everything down. The horses are resting. So I just let them be hairy when it's cold. And then I clip them when I can get down to Florida and give them a bath. And then obviously the blanketing and all that, but it's like that's like what people say, it's the lights, you know, like it's the daylight, so you can blanket them all you want and you're still going to be clipping. So yeah, it's not an enjoyable job, but I do it. I have a chestnut right now. It came out pretty good. I was feeling good about myself.
The chestnuts always end up looking like a red dun when they've been body clipped. It's pretty amazing.
mine turned into a pumpkin for Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you should do, a little jack-o'-lantern body clip on the haunches. You know, why not?
I totally missed the boat. I should have done that because he is bright orange. I mean, he legit looked like a pumpkin.
That would be perfect. Well, let's talk to Jennifer and find out what's coming up on today's show, and then I'll get back with you on what's going on with S Equestrian. Jennifer?
Well, on today's S Equestrian Jumping Edition, brought to you by Five Star Bridles, Jump Media is going to wrap up the Washington International Horse Show, and then we'll get to know Five Star Bridles with Jamie Green, and then Caitlin Shields of Canterbury Farm is going to tell us how to keep our hardworking show horses happy and healthy while negotiating what seems to be the never-ending A show circuit. And then Andrew Philbrick from Hunter Farms talks about the importance of breeding and developing horses here in the United States with the Princeton Young Jumper Championships. And last but not least, happy sandwich day, everybody. Please celebrate responsibly.
Well, listen, Emily, I've got to tell you, I did my first horse show with my little Mustang. I've always wanted to train a Mustang, and I got one, and I took him to his first dressage show this past weekend, and I was representing S Equestrian Wholesale. I had the shirt and the coat on, and it's a talk of it is a talking point when you are talking to somebody and they look at your jacket and they go, "Wow, what is that? What an amazing jacket that you can use in the jumper ring, but also it is so nice and it looks good enough to take into the dressage ring." That is hard to do, my friend.
It's funny that you say that because when I saw your picture, it was a bit far away, and you know, you tagged us Equestrian in the post, which was awesome, and I know you rock the shirt all the time, but I wondered, wait, is that the coat? Because it really, you know, they're a little, you know, particular about the length and the cut, but it really did look like a dressage coat. I was surprised.
That is hilarious. You didn't even recognize your own coat immediately. It's really, really pretty. It looks really, really good. And to tell everybody, you know, I'm walking around in it and I'm like, touch it, feel it, feel it. It's a machine washable.
So crumple it up, throw it in your tack trunk.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And you just pull back out, shake it off, and put it on. It's great. So it was definitely a big hit at the dressage show, and it looks so nice and very classic. So I am here to recommend the S Equestrian coats, maybe not the colorful ones we're going to talk about in a minute, but for the eventing world, now it's been proven in the eventing world, and now it's been proven in the dressage world. So you got jumpers, you got every English discipline is covered. Get an S Equestrian coat. You can use it in any discipline.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, totally. It really did look the right length and everything. So yeah, well, it's good to know the size chart for the jumper girls works for the dressage girls and eventing. And surely the fabric is so hard wearing. Like, it's really indestructible. Like, I'm a barn girl. I do my own work. Like, I for sure am guilty of just chucking my jacket in my trunk and like going to bathe my horse and then forgetting about it until like later the day or the next morning, depending on how busy I am. But it just kind of comes out and washes. It's hard wearing material.
It's great too, because they're hot. We're in Phoenix. It's a sunny day and you're hot and you're wearing your coat and it's so breathable and it's so light and it's so comfortable. I feel sorry for the former me that had to wear a wool show coat. Like, I laugh at the
so funny.
I was like, I'm never going back.
Oh, I know. And it's not been that long that we've all kind of everybody switched over to these technical properties, which is crazy because it's so hot out there all the time. Not all the time, but most people are competing when it's warm out.
Yeah, I would definitely say it is worth the investment, especially being able to, I didn't even worry about it. I peeled it off, you know, I'm sweaty. I peel it off and I just chucked it on top of my saddle, which was on the saddle rack, and shoved it in the trailer and got, you just don't have to worry about it. And before it'd be like, oh my God, I got to hang it up because then I got to get it dry clean. And then I got to make sure I have it by the time I don't forget to pick it up before the next show. I mean, how many times you've been like, oh my God, I got to go to the dry cleaners. I have a show this weekend.
Well, and like, what a ridiculous proposition to dry clean like an athletic wear, like outfit, whatever it's a uniform terrible. Essentially. It's crazy. No, I'm so glad that you wore it and you like it. I honestly didn't recognize it because it looks so dressage-y.
I know. Well, you know, just I'm such a DQ, Emily, that like it just makes
it rubs
sense.
Off.
It just rubs off. Yeah. Let's talk about these amazing, gorgeous coats that you've made. It, like you said, they're the colors of the rainbow, the colors of Jolly Ranchers, I think, as you said. Talk to us about these show coats and the colors, and they are really taking off, aren't they?
They are. People really, really like them. We originally, that first size run that we made was just out of plain black. I also did a navy, just a handful of sizes, like you remember, because we were waiting for yours. And then I sent them out, sold them just as a batch. Going forward, I wanted to offer so many more things than I could make and have ideas to do or the funds to build. So we've done a custom made-to-order program where you can customize your colors, whether it be the base color. We have about 17 different colors to choose from. And then you can pick a line, a trim. There's sort of a piping that goes around the inside of the coat. And then there is a collar option. Some people like those two-tone collars in the jumpers. Also, you can change the pocket. The pocket flap can be customized into whatever color that you like. And then we have a standard size chart, which is you can look in and see where you fit in. So it's sort of a custom stock piece. They come out very quickly. And it's practically custom because it's going to be all of your own personal colors. We've got a couple great ones going in right now that are all funky colors with two-tone collars. BJ, who we had on the radio at one point, who was the very famous picture of the purple coat jumping around this summer in Saugerty, she ordered a couple more funky ones. They look amazing. And then you can – what I really wanted to do is make it like – you know, we all get sick of wearing the same thing. I do. I think it's ridiculous. Like, I don't want to see two people in the same class wearing the same thing, the jumpers. You don't have to. It's not in the rules. You can get funky and wear whatever you like, whatever your barn colors, your team, you know, dress as a team, whatever. But you have options with this new construction because not only can you customize your colors on your stock jacket, you can customize your button choices. And the buttons actually come off the coat, and then you can put other ones back on. There's a it's a shank button that has a ring on the back of it. And so you could buy two or three sets of buttons that you thought were cute and maybe some blingy fancy ones and then something a little toned down. But it's really, you got a lot of options, which is what it's I wanted like, to provide.
Like day to night, dressage to jumpers. You can just do either one.
Yes, and that's, seriously.
It's true. And what's fantastic is that you can just tell that all of this was created by a rider. And that's you, because it is just functional and it works and it's so customizable that it's just amazing. The colors are from navy to royal to hunter green to fuchsia to, I mean, it's just an incredible amount of colors. I would encourage everybody, if you don't know what we're talking about, go to SECEequestrianco.com and you can see all of the new show coats and you can see the custom shirts, which I from what I understand, are incredibly popular right now.
They are. They're really taking off. The orders are flooding in. We've got so many IHSA. We do the college teams, the high school teams, which is a bit of a different construction on the outside of the shirt for equitation, but the liner and the fabric is the same. It's that nice AeroCool. It's 50 UV 50 plus. But then what's really fun are the barn shirts, because you can get a it's only 8 pieces, which is way less than we were doing before. Before it was like 20, 25 because we were just getting going. Now the orders are getting big enough that we're getting a great opportunity to do only 8 pieces. You only have to order 8 shirts, which is not a lot. They don't have to be the same size. They have to be the same style. So you would do 8 men's or 8 women's, a short or a long. But then you get your own logo inside the collar, which is so fun. It's like, they're real team barn shirts. Or hey, if you just want to buy 8 shirts for yourself, we have people doing that too because the minimum is small. So it's a lot of options. And then you can customize with your show coat and be super fabulous.
Wow. Just absolutely. The different options you guys have are awesome. And I am aware, I'm a believer, and I'm a super fan of your stuff. So check out ECE at sequestrianco.com and you can see all of these things. We're going to work on getting our first guest on the line. And tell us a little bit about our first guest.
So we have our first guest is my good friend and stellar news girl for Jump Media, Lindsay Yandon. She was covering down there the Washington Horse Show in DC, which is super exciting. Hello? So we hope we get here on the phone. Welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Hi there. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I am doing well.
I feel like I haven't seen you in ages.
I know. Tell me about it.
We're our Saugerty's crew, and we're all split up now until you get down here to Florida.
Couple more months.
Ah, it's too long. So we've got really sort of an exciting coverage, I thought, here talking about Washington. I myself did not get to go this year. I went last year and I posted a ton of pictures on the Jumping Radio Show Facebook page so people could see how epic it is. They've got the stabling out on the streets. They've got the schooling area like out on the sidewalk. It's outrageous. But tell us about Washington.
Yeah, so you missed a great year. I'm sorry to tell you.
No.
So, you know, what I obviously, you know, one of the most endearing parts about Washington is that it's in the heart of DC. It's at the Verizon Center in downtown Washington. And so, you know, the horses are literally walking up the sidewalk while people are walking by on their lunch breaks. The stabling is in the middle of the streets. The schooling area is in, you know, the basement of the Verizon Center. And then all the competition happens where the hockey rink is and where the Wizards play. So, you know, it's a great event, and I really like it when horse shows feel a little bit more than horse shows and they feel like real events, and Washington, you know, hits that out of the park every year.
Yeah, totally, because you get all of this foot traffic from spectators. I know a couple people, actually, that go every year. They're from the area, and they're not horse people at all, but it's like a thing. They, like, you know, go to watch the Wizards play sometimes, and sometimes they go to Washington National Horse Show, International Horse Show. Do you know what the numbers are that people are pulling in for these spectators?
I mean, half the Verizon Center was packed, you know, not the upper levels, but, you know, we packed every seat, you know, in the regular general admission seating. So, I mean, it's impressive. And, you know, I think they draw a lot because they have, you know, obviously great competition. This year's World Cup qualifying class was part of the North American League. So it was the $125,000 Longines FEI World Cup Jumping Washington. And that was presented by Events DC. But they also have, aside from competition, really a lot of spectator-friendly events. You know, the Shetland ponies were in town racing. They put jumper riders up on barrel racers and have them race barrels one night. Obviously Barn Night, where they have the Gambler's Choice costume class. And then they also have a kids day for the kids in the local community. And what's really interesting about that is, you know, when you go to other horse shows, you see a lot of kids at kids days in breeches. They came from their ring and they want to check out kids day. This is completely different. It's all kids who maybe have never even seen a horse before coming to, you know, pet horses, feed them, ride them. We have a horseless horse show. So, you know, it's really engaging to the local community, and I think they appreciate that.
Oh, for sure. And that really, that's what we need as a sport keep building the numbers. Tell me about the Shetland Pony Steeplechase. I feel like I missed something fantastic.
Yeah, so U.S. Pony Racing, which I didn't really know existed until I started working with Washington, they go around and children, I think as young as 7 or 8 and up to, you know, 10, 11, 12, race Shetland ponies around, you know, a mock steeplechase course in these rings. And it is equal parts adorable and terrifying. they are out to win. So it's really exciting. And we usually have a couple celebrity judges from the evening's international jumper class, and they judge it. And so it's a lot of fun, and it gets rowdy when those steeplechase ponies are running.
Oh my gosh, that's outrageous. Is there video of this?
There absolutely is. We have a ton of videos on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we also have Periscope for Washington. So we're Washington International Horse Show on Facebook, WIHS on Instagram, Twitter, and Periscope, and then also WIH1 on Snapchat. So
perfect. You guys check it out. That's not something you want to miss. Now, what I think is interesting, and maybe I just sort of missed this last year when I went, but I saw on your schedule here that there was a few, at least one here, the dressage freestyle exhibition.
Yeah, we had Allison Brock and Roosevelt come and do a dressage exhibition. And, you know, we kind of wanted to showcase because we get so many people from the community who are really, you know, not familiar with horse sport, we wanted to showcase, you know, everything about the horse and how spectacular they are and athletic they are. And so we had her come and do a dressage exhibition and people loved it. And that horse was a superstar in that environment.
Oh, that's so cool. And that was new, right? You didn't do that last year.
Yeah, that was new. I mean, we kind of decided we wanted to bring dressage back to Washington. So we didn't have that last year, but yeah, we kind of brought it back this year. And you know, for most horses that don't get that indoor environment in this country, probably unless they go to, you know, World Cup finals, he was amazing.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that because as jumpers, we can get quite a bit of mileage, but I guess that's not the case for dressage.
Yep. He was a star.
And I mean, the venue is, I mean, it would, you need to have a special horse to go in there and jump in a big coliseum like that with the jumbotron and all. I mean, there's even just that whole tier of all that beautiful VIP tables and all the people. It's so shiny with all the glasses and like the things you notice when you ride a spooky horse. You're like, oh gosh, he's going to be looking up all the time. Never going to get around.
No, it's kind of adorable actually when most of the horses on the first day, you know, when they get to the in gate, you know, they're all looking up and it's kind of an interesting expression on a horse's face to see it looking up because you don't always see that. And they're kind of like, what? Because, you know, the big center jumbotron is hanging down and yeah, the VIPs are up on like the third level. So yeah, it's quite an environment. And, you know, these horses, you know, when you see them at outdoor horse shows and you think, wow, you know, they're handling a lot and then bring them to this indoor ring, you know, they're amazing. You know, the schooling area is inside. The ring is obviously quite different than anything they've experienced all year. But they just handle it and they perform, you know, well on top of that. So, you know, they're amazing.
It is really impressive. I think I love seeing, I rode there as a junior quite a bit and competed for equitation finals. And then I've really only gone back and visited once or twice as an adult, as a professional. But I loved seeing all of the foot traffic out on the street, just like passerbyers. They were like, whoa, wait, what have we happened upon here? This is like crazy. They've got the streets. This is DC. They've got streets blocked off and schooling areas out in the sidewalk.
And, you know, people now, I think that we've had this in, because, you know, the horse show is 57 years old and it's kind of bounced around to different homes, but it's been in DC for a while now. And, you know, you don't hear people complaining that the streets are closed. You almost see them coming and they remember it from year to year and say, oh my gosh, we had to come and see the horses. And just seeing the stabling areas in the streets is enough for them. You know, everyone's taking pictures and, you know, petting the horses. I was on my way to, I think, pick up lunch one day and a preschool was on the sidewalk with probably 15 children with little flags in their hands. And, two horses walked by and just stopped and they ate it up. And I'm thinking, these horses are spectacular.
Seriously.
So, you know, that was a pretty nice picture was all these, you know, preschoolers petting these horses. And these kids have probably never, you know, if they've seen a horse, they've probably never touched one. So it was pretty amazing.
That is so great. It's so good for the sport. And this isn't some, you know, country fair horse show. This is one of our top horse shows of the year.
Yeah, you know, we had ABC7 out to do some interviews with some people and, you know, we kind of positioned Vicky Lowell, the president of the horse show, in front of one of the stabling areas and this horse happened to walk by and we said, you know, we'd like a horse in the background. Can we just have him stand there? And it turns out it's Avalanche, the horse that Tori Colvin rides in the High Performance Hunters. So, you know, you can't.
It's so funny.
Any horse you pick is going to be a decorated one, so.
For sure. This is a invite only.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So my favorite class, which I sadly missed, I'll have to get online and watch it. But tell me about the puissance and how is for those of us that are listening that don't know what a puissance is or how it's run, how is this puissance run?
Yeah, so I think we had, you know, five or six people attempt the puissance, and, you know, they started it, I believe it was at about 5-7, I want to say. And, you know, everyone gets a turn, and if you knock something down, you know, you don't return, and it whittles down to a couple people, and it turns out that Joost Verloy from Belgium jumped 6-11. With his horse Sunshine, and they were pretty impressive all week long. So he's 19 years old.
Wow.
And that win and a few others helped him win leading international rider, leading under 25 rider, leading jumper owner, and leading foreign rider. So he had a good week.
It was his week. Last year, yeah. It was Jessica Springsteen was turning it in like that.
Yep.
Winning everything. Wow, that's impressive. We got all these young riders, you know, that get opportunities to compete and just get out there on the horse show circuit and keep getting sharp. And you're, I mean, Bertram Allen, you're seeing all of these sort of like teenagers and young 20s come out and whoop everybody in these classes. Yeah. It's really wild.
You know, his energy was pretty contagious. The crowd loved him all week. And you know, what's cool about the Washington Puissance is, Anthony D'Ambrosio sets the courses all week and he holds the current Puissance record. So, you know, he gets to watch and see if someone's going to beat him.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's exciting each year.
Do you know what his record was? What is it?
It's over 7 feet, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that is, it's crazy to canter down to big jumps like that. It's just with the wall, because you can't see through them. It's spectacular.
As they built it up all night, you know, I was standing in front of it. And so the horses would walk up to check it out. And at the very end, you couldn't even see the tips of their ears. You could just see the rider's helmet as they walked behind it. So,
oh my God,
it's amazing.
But you know what? It's a crown pleaser, as long as it doesn't get too high. And I think they kind of cut it off. I don't know what the height is, but there's a height that they don't go past. And I mean, people love it. Yeah. Okay, I see it right here. The North American record to beat is 7'7.5".
Yeah, crazy. And you know, these riders know their horses also. And you see some people that get to a certain height and, you know, they could advance, but they're like, no, I'm going to leave it at that. So, you know, they're very responsible about, you know, keeping their horses safe, and they know what they can accomplish and what they can't. So,
yeah, there's got to be quite a good level of horsemanship involved in that discretion. Cause that's, I mean, those are huge jumps. You take a biff into that and that's a career ender probably.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. But it's like really cool. This horse show, what I love, because they have everything, like you're saying, from the Shetland pony racing, the dressage expo. And then, you know, I think it's, you don't always get to see the top hunters and the top jumpers compete together in the same venue.
Yeah. We had, you know, usually they split it up in the beginning of the week because they have to stable the horses in shifts almost. So the hunters are there earlier in the week and then they kind of have to move them out so the international jumpers can come in and then move those horses out so that the ponies can come in at the end of the week. But yeah, at the beginning of the week, we kick off with hunters and, you know, Washington draws a lot of people from the West Coast, which is really fun to see because we don't get to see those riders compete against the East Coast riders very often. And you know, this year it was all about John French. He won leading rider and grand hunter champion. So, it was really great to watch some people that you don't get to watch compete all year, at Washington. So.
Yeah, totally. The different coasts, it is. It's so great to have everybody together. Now, what is the website that everybody can get all the information on?
So it's WIHS.org.
Okay. I should have said that myself because I'm on it.
WIHS.org.
And we're already planning for next year. So, you know, tickets go on sale a few months before. And it's one not to be missed.
Well, fantastic.
That's so cool.
Well, yeah. I could listen to you girls chat forever. It's so exciting. And now I really want to see some Shetland pony steeplechasing. Oh my God.
I can't wait.
Other places. I mean, they do it at Devon and they have a Facebook page. I think it's US Pony Racing. And I'm sure they have their schedule up there, but it is adorable. And the riders, you know, the kids dress in silks. And, they're, it's pretty awesome.
It's adorable. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we, I guess we'll talk to you probably again next month.
Awesome. Sounds
for
great.
Sure.
All right.
Later, Lindsay. Hurry up and get to Wellington. Bye.
Yeah, you need some friends down there, huh? You getting sick of your husband?
No, never sick of the husband. Can't say that on the radio.
Nope.
It's all good.
It's just us girls.
Yes. Seriously. No, it is. It is kind of lonely down here, though, in the beginning. We get down here way earlier than everybody, and it's because we just can't tolerate the cold. And then I get other business down here. And like we already discussed, the body clipping is a factor. You just need to get on out. But yeah, it's my Facebook news stream is just like flooded with people like checking in at different points on 95, checking in at the ag stop. Oh, they're coming. Wow. The migration is in full swing.
Yeah. Did you come down earlier than most? Because you brought the hipster down, didn't you?
I did. I was so excited. We were on the fence about that because he's 3, but, you know, he's going to be 4. And it just, the winters just get so cold up there. So I thought, you know what? We'll find something nice for him. He's not really suitable right now to be in a stall. He kind of pitches a fit. So he needs to do a little inside outside. But yeah, he came down. He's, we're going to experience our first body clip, I think, this week is going to be exciting. Ooh, I know.
That's
I'm scared. Well, thank God he's so small.
Then you can get it done a lot quicker.
Yep.
Well, we've got our next guest on the line, Jamie Green from 5-Star Bridals. Oh my gosh, I've been online shopping. These bridals are stunning.
They really are. They really are. It's a great company, super products. So welcome to the show, Jamie.
Good morning, Emily and Jamie. Thanks so much for having me on the show this morning.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. We've been on your website. Well, I was texting her this morning. Your website is fantastic, and she does this professionally, marketing and websites. Yes. It shows.
Yeah, I would like to see
a lot of different things.
I would like the Kingsbury Figure 8 bridle on your website and the horse that's wearing it. Can I have him too?
Oh, well, the horse is actually my horse.
Oh, I picked
that's
well.
That's my off-the-track thoroughbred horse, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, he's gorgeous. I love a dark bay. So, yeah, your models and your bridles are absolutely stunning.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I really, it's a great business to be involved with. And it's just, you know, very inspirational. So it's nice to be able to kind of take the creative side of me and combine it with horses and design and have it come to fruition.
Yeah, it really is. It's quite impressive, just the backstory on the company, and you offer quite a few different programs. I got you sort of got connected with you through Amanda Flint, who's a mutual friend of ours, and she was telling me about it. But tell me, when did you start? You know, what is the background of this company?
I got the idea back in 2008, and originally my thought was I was going to have an online store and I was going to sell premium brands of bridal work. So it wasn't my own bridles that I was doing. However, at that time, the e-commerce industry was still kind of in its infancy, and I couldn't get an account anywhere because I didn't have a brick and mortar store, which so isn't the case today. It was suggested to me that, listen, you've got a creative background. Why don't you do your own bridles and your own designs? And I thought, you know what? There are so many bridles out there, and you walk into a tack store and you see just, you know, row upon row of bridles, and they all kind of look the same. And I thought, well, what's to make me buy one bridle over another, apart from price point? And so I thought if I could design something that was a little bit distinctive without getting too crazy, that kind of stood out on the racks and had its own branding that you could identify with and something that the company stood for, that it was a different, you know, it'd be a different product and different company to show up. From its infancy, you know, we've got a little bit of a different stitch pattern, which is pretty intricate and difficult to do. I've got a really good manufacturing company that does private label work that has been great about bringing all my different designs to fruition. And I always wanted to have the company stand for more than just selling bridles. So that's how I got involved with
giving back to different charities, in particular Canner USA and the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. So those are sort of two pet charities of mine that I'm involved with. And it's really great to be able to give back through that, have a really quality product that stands out from other products. And customers have really kind of identified with the company, not only for just the little bit of difference that it makes on their horse and the great features that our bridles have that really are built around comfort for the horse. I think that help them make them perform better. When you're more comfortable, you're certainly not going to be quite as fussy in the bridle sometimes. And then the fact that we do give back and people have really identified with that. So yeah, it's just been a really great experience and the company has slowly grown from there. And then, you know, I have different riders that I sponsor as well. It's a small, you know, I have to be a little bit picky because I'm a small company and I do get drained pretty fast. But I do have some riders that, like Amanda, who rides in the Grand Prix ring. And then I have a few event riders, four-star riders, Doug Payne and Kristen Schmolze, that I also sponsor. And it's really a cool thing to do because, you know, I can kind of, in a way, ride along with their careers as they progress and become more successful and more known. So it's another, you know, wonderful thing to be involved in.
Oh, for sure. That's a great rider list. I was looking here on your website, fivestarbridles.com under the Our Values tab, and it's really, really fantastic all that you're involved in. Tell us about this Bridles with Benefits program.
So the Bridles with Benefits program, I started probably about 4 years ago. And that, again, was another, you know, idea that just kind of popped up. I had some extra bridles that were sampled that were laying around. And I contacted Canner. And I said, listen, I've got bridles. They're sitting here. I'm not using them. Could you guys use them? And they're like, oh, my God, we could so use bridles because we are using one bridle on six different horses. So anything that you can send, that would be terrific. So that's, I sent some bridles and then I thought, well, gee, everybody, you know, you're buying a bridle for a horse, whether it's a new horse that you're buying for or a replacement bridle. And what do you do with the bridle? Well, it's sitting in a pack trunk. So I thought, well, you know, here's an opportunity. If somebody wants to send me in a bridle, and they're not using, as long as it's in good, workable, usable condition, I can then send it on to Canner. And in return, I offer a 10% discount on a purchase on the website. So that's how that's gotten started. So sometimes, you know, it's like you just kind of stumble on an idea, and then it just takes off from there.
Oh, for sure. It's a great idea because, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, maybe the bridle's not in poor working condition, but they've sold a horse or they were only leasing a horse or whatever. And now they've got a bridle that no way, shape or form fits this new horse's head. And what a great way to get a little discount and then give back. I mean, that's everybody's got to be working to help the community for sure. Those race horses. I love that. Now I'm on your other page, your other tab here on the breastplates. And I got to say, I do manufacturing myself. I have a clothing line and it is a nightmare to make different pieces and different styles. And it is really incredible that you have four different styles of breastplates.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, again, it's just sort of, you know, something will pop into my head and I have to be honest with you. I was in my car this morning driving and I was thinking about one of the bridles that I do. And I do a hunter bridle, and it's got a Croco embossed brow band and nose band. And I thought, well, I like it, and it's been popular, but what can I do to it to kind of tweak it and make it even a little bit nicer? Or not so much nicer, but just add something to it. And so I just came up with an idea this morning, and I've got to get a hold of my manufacturer because he's in the process of making some, and see if he can, you know, make those little changes for me before they ship out. But that's kind of how it works. Or I'll see, like with my 5-point breastplate, this goes way back when I first started sponsoring Doug Payne, and he had a breastplate 5-point that he was using that was sort of like the 5-point that everybody used. And he says, you know what? What can you do to this? Because I hate the fact that the sheepskin
on it, just it just gets worn out and it gets disgusting. So the first thing that popped in my head, well, why wouldn't you use just leather padding then? And so that's how that was kind of born. And I'll see another breastplate design, then I'll see what it has on it. And I'll say, well, how can I add to this? You know, can I put more features on this breastplate than what is on another company's breastplate and still have it be, you know, at a competitive price point compared to them? So that's another way that I go about doing things. But yeah, again, you never know where that inspiration comes up. And I'm sure you know, go through the same thing with your clothing company, that, you know, something you might see something that somebody's wearing and it's like, huh, I got an idea.
Oh, totally. They hate me at my sewing room office. Every time I come in, I'm like, so what I was thinking was we're going to do a little bit of this. They're like, oh, yeah. Emily, you have to stop with the ideas. Just keep it simple. Like, no, we've got to make it better. But I think that's a good product, you know, and then people like it because it's good. They're going to spend money on it. And your price points are very attractive for all these strapped goods.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll try. You know, it's always sort of a balance between trying to manage, you know, manufacturing costs, which always seem to get more expensive, and trying to maintain quality and, you know, not get the price so outrageous that it just is beyond what people can afford, but still try to make some money at the same time. So it's a delicate, it's a delicate balance, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, no, for sure, for sure. I love your the figure eight with the patent leather accents.
Yeah, that's a beautiful bridle.
That's
and,
really
you know, and it's just a little bit it's a little bit of a, what do I want to say, fancier bridle, but it's not sort of so over the top that it's like, oh my God, this is a garish looking bridle. I mean, it's a beautiful bridle when you look at it and it's on the horse, and it's so difficult, you know, you try to convey as much as you can through photos and light boxes and everything, but you really have to see it actually on the horse. So, and that's a new bridle that came out a couple of months ago, so, and it's been selling very well.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You absolutely don't notice that it's got patent accents on it until you zoom in. But then the other thing that's so attractive is all of the stitching that is all over the, I mean, I'm a jumper girl, so I'm looking at the figure eights and it's, they lay flat. It's the ring is in just the right place. They're nice.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm a real stickler for the stitching because I do like, and some people don't like the white stitching. They're very sort of traditional, but I love that white stitching. So every, you know, there's a lot of edge stitching on those bridles and along with the fancy stitching. And even like the nose disc on the figure eight, if you look at the shape, it's in the shape of the Celtic Cross logo for our company, which is another design that I kind of came up when I initially started doing the bridle designs. But I really try to emphasize sort of the quality of the stitching and then what kind of features can I have that kind of help, you know, make the horse more comfortable. And with the figure eight bridles on the nose bend, behind the rings, I have just a tab with just enough padding so that the ring isn't just sitting on the horse. And it's been great for horses. Like, you know, a lot of thoroughbreds have those really sort of bony faces. And it just gives them a little bit more comfort so that ring isn't kind of sitting on a, you know, more of a sensitive spot on their face. And it's subtle, sure. So you don't see it until you're actually looking at it on the horse. So, but it's a nice feature.
Now, what do you do, hunter bridles?
Do? Our hunter bridles, I have a wide nose band bridle that's been really popular, and then one with more of a traditional profile. And they come both with the integrated crown piece, which a lot of people like. And then for people that really like that very old school traditional hunter style, I have just the regular crown piece as well. And the hunter bridles, I don't sell on my website. They are available through tax stores. And we've got a select group of stores that I'm trying to grow that carry the brand. And I would say my two biggest stores would be the Tack Room down in South Carolina. And then they've got WC Equestrian out in Las Vegas and Mary's Tack and Feed out in California. So those are, and they all have online stores as well. So, and they've been, you know, great customers to have.
Now, Jamie, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about any sort of holiday sales you have coming up. And again, you guys, this is 5starbridals.com is where you can go and see all of these gorgeous pieces of artwork. And by the way, it's just awesome to talk to two entrepreneurial, empowering, strong women that like get in there and they get it done and you guys make it happen. And y'all are perfectionists. And it's just awesome to see how strong both of you guys are and just talking about how business works and how you go into your sewers or your creators and the stitching. And it's just really awesome to listen to both you guys. It's just, it just inspiring for women everywhere to have this conversation.
Oh,
Jamie. Well, thank you. And I think so many more people now are connecting with the smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to these very large manufacturers, and I don't mean that just in the equestrian products industry, but overall in various different product categories.
No, I mean I've done all my
manufacturers.
Yeah, holiday shopping on Etsy right now. It's just like the people that make their things and create their things. I just have such a respect for. So, holiday sales before we let you go.
We are having a Black Friday sale, as we usually do.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a really good sale with some really good price points. And if you want to get advance notice of the sale and also get an extra benefit off of the discount that everybody else is going to get, you should go on my website, 5starbridals.com, and there's a tab for an insider's list. And you just sign up there with your email address and you will get an additional discount for our sale along with the discount that everybody else is going to get.
Oh, fantastic.
So it'll be really good.
And again, this is Jamie Green. Thank you for joining us from 5starbridals.com. Go get on the insider list, get a special deal. And they're just absolutely gorgeous. Look at the beautiful bridles and the beautiful horses. The photos are awesome. So again,
they are
thanks,
great.
Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. And you guys are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by S Equestrian and 5-Star Bridles that you just heard. So check them out. Check out sequestrianco.com. And we've got to, let's see, a little bit more about Hipster. You've got the show baby coming down. I'm just trying to get all the stuff in about you, you know, in between these guests, but we've got Hipster coming down. He's about to be body clipped. What type of stuff are you doing with him right now?
He's three. He's
no jumping not, yet. Or
no. He's not really an early birthday. So he is saddle broke. I ride him around a bit.
Okay.
And he'll walk, trot, canter, and I can take him over little poles. I free jumped him very small, but just through the chute a few times. He jumps just like his mother. It's awesome. And the other one didn't as much. You know, I had his older brother, the older stallion, the five-year-old last year showing, or he was four when I had him. But anyways, this guy is, in my opinion, takes after the mother a bit more. But I just, you have to walk the line. They have to be broke. It's a stallion. We do a lot of groundwork, and he's really good stallion. He's not steady really at all. But that's kind of why I wanted to bring him, because he's a stallion, just keep him going a little bit under tack, mm-hmm. maybe some trail riding and stuff, just so he's not like a monster when he turns four. But it's slow. You just have to listen to them. I do a lot of babies, and you can feel when they're growing and when they're not. And when they're growing, they're lethargic, they're tired, and you got to back off because that's no good. You can't work them hard when they're growing. So it's a little dance. We're probably not going to do much impressive. That body clip I'm looking forward to, though, I'll post that. Hopefully a success photo.
Oh, please do. Please do. That's amazing. You talk about letting them have their growing pains and they're kind of going through different things. It is definitely an art working with babies.
You got to listen to them. They tell you.
Yeah, they certainly do. Well, we've got our next guest on the line, Caitlin Shields from Canterbury Farm.
Yay. So Caitlin is actually somebody that
Good morning.
I grew up riding with. Good morning, Caitlin. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
I thought this was great. It was sort of last minute. I shot you a text and thought, you know what? Kayla would be great coming on air. For those of you that don't know her or not show jumping competitive riders or keeping up with it these days, Caitlin had a very successful junior career, finished off with a few young rider gold medals. Now she's continuing on with her professional career at Canterbury Farms. So we thought it'd be great to have you on and tell us, how do you juggle this operation, an A-circuit operation, all year round with breaks, vacations, ramping up, all of it?
It is quite a juggle, but, you know, we show, you know, pretty much throughout the whole year. As of right now, we've had a couple weeks of downtime. So this is kind of like regrouping before we head off to Florida for a few months. So the horses have had some R&R and the riders and the trainers have had some R&R. So we're just starting to kind of regroup and get ready for the next show.
And now when do you kind of, it's hard because you probably, I don't know how, first of all, how big is your operation there at Canterbury Farms?
We have, I want to say we have a total of 35 stalls. We have two aisles. Canterbury takes up one of the aisles. We have 22 horses in house right now. Basically all show horses. We have a couple that don't horse show that more or less do it as a hobby. But yeah, I mean, we're quite busy.
Seriously. And now are they sort of like, how do you juggle that? Do you have horses going to indoors? Are they or not or resting?
This year we had a lot of young horses. We actually ended up doing Capital Challenge. I personally qualified for the Developing Pro Challenge myself. So we did that with a couple of the young ones. The pre-green horses got the opportunity to do that. And then after that, we kind of, next year is our focus to kind of qualify for all of the indoor, Harrisburg, Washington, and the National. So, you know, we did horse shows all throughout the year. We do Florida. We do a little bit of home shows in Chicago. Our favorite show in Traverse City, Michigan is a great horse show up there, the Great Lakes Equestrian Festival. And then we mix in a little bit of Kentucky and then the fall shows.
Oh my gosh. And you're on the road. And I just want to give a little shout out. We just picked up Caitlin Shields as an Equestrian sponsored rider. We are so lucky to have you, Miss Girl, winning out there.
Very, very excited. I'm very excited.
I guess that kind of, you know, brings up the big question is, well, you have to change your program like every year, depending on what the horses are doing, you know, balancing in. Maybe right now you're doing a break, but next year they're going to be doing indoors. I mean, how do you decide, make plans for these horses? Is it by horse or by rider or what?
I mean, I think right now I've got a couple amateurs that want to, for next year, qualify for indoors. So we'll kind of structure everybody's program, kind of the start of Florida, because that's sort of when points start happening. You know, December 1st is the new year for the horse showing. So when we get to Florida, you know, like I said, I have a couple young hunters that are going to move up to do the first years this year. A few that are just going to start the pre-green. So I think we'll structure every horse, you know, every horse will have its own kind of program and focus for the year. I mean, it'll be every horse show will be a little bit something different that we'll have to, before we get there, sort of have a plan for everybody. You know, if for some reason, middle of the year, we feel like a certain horse or rider needs, more points or whatnot, we'll, you know, add on a couple more horse shows, or if they're all set with points, we can back off a little bit. You know, it kind of just depends on how the year goes.
Wow. I mean, that's a huge operation to manage as individuals, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. We have a great group of guys that work for us. We have a great staff. Greg is a fantastic owner, trainer, and boss. You know, he is very involved with the organization and, you know, planning. And we have a barn manager, Margot Lyons, who does a great job with, you know, the feed and the care and the shoeing and just making sure that everything is, you know, everybody is on schedule for what they need. So whether it's the feeding, the warming, the, you know, everything.
Oh, it's such a huge job.
24/7 job.
Totally, totally. And yes. With that number, I mean, that's huge. Now, how do you kind of decide when a horse needs a break?
Well, this year, what we ended up doing is a few of the horses that kind of, we got a new mare in the middle of the summer as a new horse for one of our bigger clients, Michelle Durpetti.
She bought a young horse from Europe. So we kind of went right after the horse, you know, got right into the program, you know, really had a focus to get qualified for pre-grain finals. We did that. She went. She was great. And then she just kept stepping up to the plate more and more. That horse's name is Serafina. She's going to be a really nice horse. So for some horse like that, you know, we went so strong. And then, you know, she came to Capital Challenge. And then we decided after Capital Challenge, let's turn her out in the paddock for a month. Let her get a little unfit. You know, let's pull her shoes. Let her be a horse for a month. You know, and then I've got a couple horses that kind of, you know, like I said, there's a few here that don't horse show. So they just, you know, stay in their program daily. And then I have a young jumper that I moved up this year to jumping in the bigger classes and some of the Grand Prix, which is a huge goal for me. You know, I bought him as a 6-year-old and now he's 8 this year. So I did a lot with him this summer. So he's had some time off, which has been great for him as well. So now we're just kind of re-gearing everybody up, getting everybody fit, you know, riding everybody, getting ready for Florida because it's right around the corner.
It is. So now,
which
even
is
your
really scary.
I know, right? The year does fly by, especially with you guys out there showing all the time.
Yeah.
Now, your Grand Prix horse, even, what does his break look like? Same thing? Pull the shoes to the pasture?
I did not pull his shoes. He is quite a character. I like to call him my unicorn. He's very magical, has quite a personality. I gave him time off, but time off for jumpers, I think for a lot of people, not necessarily just chucking him out in a field and letting him be a complete horse, because I feel like he would have been way too fresh, probably would have done something silly in the paddock. So, you know, I hop on him. Just let him chill right around the farm. We've got a beautiful facility that has plenty of hills that we can walk, or, you know, just kind of get out of the ring and let him do other things. So he had about 2 weeks off of just turning out, and now we're just kind of transitioning back to some simple light flat work. And then, you know, the next month and a half or so, we'll gear back up and get him super fit and ready to go.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because everybody kind of has their own opinion, but some people do pull the shoes and chuck them back out in the pasture at whatever age they are. My feeling is that they get so unfit that then you have to work so hard to get them fit again that you've kind of like defeated the purpose of giving them the break like that.
Right. I think too, a lot of, you know, I know that a lot of show horses, like, that is their job. That is what they know. You know, it is like anybody else's job. It's like what you know. And when you take a huge break like that, you start to go a little stir crazy. I know I went away a couple of weeks ago with my family to Florida. And I know after the 3 days of not riding, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go back to work, you know. So
totally.
I think that some horses that get in that show program that are like their adrenaline pumped because they're getting on the truck and trailer to go to the war show to go do their job. Like, I know my horse absolutely loves his job. So I think a lot of them, you know, some really enjoy the vacation and some really love to work. So I think it's just a balance.
No, totally, totally. I'm on you all's website right now, this CanterburyFarmChicago.com. The facility is really beautiful.
It's really nice. Greg and his family have been doing this for 30 years. The facility here is absolutely gorgeous. Like I said, we have a giant outdoor field with hills and the ditch and the open water and a grob. And, you know, the horses have giant paddocks that they can be in all day long. We really, you know, we really like to also have the balance of, you know, horse showing plus letting the horses be a little bit of horses on their home. You know, a lot of ring work, sometimes some horses, especially young ones, I feel like sometimes get sour. So it's nice to kind of have that option to ride in the ring and then also have the field as well. So it's kind of a different for their brains, kind of keeps them animated.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And with a big operation like you guys have on the road so much, that's sort of what we wanted to highlight today with our chat, was how to manage that, because they do. I mean, for sure, the babies, they get sour. Or if you have, I mean, some horses don't stay 100% sound, maybe some of the older ones, your adult hunters, whatever.
Right.
And you've got all the tools right here at home. I wonder why your horse showing at all. Just stay home. It's beautiful.
We start to go a little stir crazy ourselves, but we just stay home for so long.
I bet.
Yeah, it's funny because we show, you know, we show nonstop all summer, and And then you get to the point where you're like, okay, I do need a break. But a couple of weeks at home, you're starting to be like, okay, I'm ready for a horse show again. I'm starting to get like anxious for Florida. And, you know, I mean, it's fun to horse show and you know, win some ribbons and see the horses do well, especially the young ones producing and, you know, and seeing your friends that I, you know, being in Chicago, I like I said, I came from the East Coast, so I don't get to see all my friends all the time. So it's great to go to shows and be able to kind of catch up with everyone.
Oh yeah, totally. No, for sure. Now your business there, do you have sort of all across the map, young horses, customers, sales horses? What would you say that Canterbury Farm specializes in?
We do. We do. We have, I would say we focus on the hunters. We have more hunters right now. My horse is only the only jumper here. We have had jumper clients. We have a group of young ones right now, young hunters. The clients have, you know, I have one woman that stays home and she's kind of does the adult hunter stuff. We've got amateur owner hunters. You know, I've got, like I said, a few that are going to move up to do the first years next year. So we've got a little bit of everything. I've also got, a couple of kids that, you know, do the children's hunters. I've got a new little girl that's feeling amped and ready to ride. She's 7 years old. We just started jumping this weekend. So it's a wide range of, we offer it all. So we're open for whichever, yeah, whatever anybody wants to do.
And so when you, first of all, how's the weather up there?
Surprisingly today, it's like it's spring. It is going to be in the 60s, the blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. It is absolutely gorgeous. So it's almost like an Indian summer out here now, because last year, I want to say we already had snow on the ground and it was 25 degrees.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, you probably have a nice indoor though. I saw the photos.
We do. We have a nice indoor. The whole barn is heated. The floors are heated. So in the winter, we leave home a group of horses that don't go to Florida. You know, some of the kids that are in school that just come down for like 2 weeks. And then, like I said, the other clients that don't horse show stay home. So it's not as dreadful as it could be. But I would say, yeah, we've got a beautiful indoor. And the barn stays very warm when everything's closed up and the heat is on.
Wow. So that's such
like
a
treat. We like to spoil everyone, too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, when I grew up riding, I mean, we were not, you know, we were pulling horses from paddocks and picking the snowballs out of their feet. We were riding outside. I mean, that's not how I grew up.
totally. Yeah. Or like walking at least from the barn to the indoor, no heated. I've never been, I've visited heated indoors. I've never ridden in one myself over the winter.
Right. Exactly.
So you've got horses now that are kind of resting. So then when do you go to Florida? How long do they stay? Do they rest while they're down there? Do they keep going?
We are going to leave after the first of the year this year. And we our plan actually this year, we're going to do a little bit something different. We're going to do about 2 months in Ocala, and then we're going to mix in a couple of weeks in Wellington this year. So I don't think we'll take, I think as of right now, I want to say we have maybe 15 or 16 that'll go to Florida. And then just a few will kind of head down to Wellington. We'd like to kind of, like I said, I grew up down there. I grew up doing Wellington. So Ocala has been a little bit of a transition different for me. But the customers here want to kind of try something a little bit different, get our feet wet and that kind of bubble down there in Wellington. So it'll be a good transition and we'll probably come home at the end of April. Hopefully it'll be a little bit warmer when we get back.
I know. Yeah, totally. Wow. So that's, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty long circuit though. January, February, March, April, and then
you know,
transitioning between Ocala, which they've got so many great classes up there. I do go up for the clothing line to go visit, see vendors, watch classes and stuff. And I mean, it's really a great layout. You got to give it to Tom with the Grand Prix ring across the street. And I mean, it's quite nice. It's really getting
nice. It's been great. Like last year, what we ended up, the first year I went down with Canterbury, we rented a farm and we kind of shipped back and forth. That got really difficult because, you know, you kind of felt like you were stuck at the horse show all day and then didn't really focus on the horses at home. So the last 2 years, we actually set up our stalls at the horse show, kind of like a barn. We did stalls and a half for everybody. We kind of did a layout so that actually we could walk through our aisle, which I think kind of made it nice for the horses. We had paddocks so the horses could turn out. You know, the horses that show for, you know, 2 or 3 consecutive weeks would have a week off so they could just hang out in the paddock. So it's kind of nice because we kind of treat it like you know, our tent stalls down there, like, we kind of treat like it's our own little barn. So, but yeah, he's done a fantastic job with the facility. I know that this year there's been rumors of the new permanent barns and a new hunter, you know, hunter derby ring. And so we're really anxious to get down and start going again.
Yeah, totally. It's exciting. It's I showed a few years when I was younger in Ocala, and like you, you know, I grew up down here in Wellington and not a ton of mileage up there, yeah. But it grows on me every year I go up to visit. And I think even maybe this year we might take a couple up there and show. It's yeah. just so nice, different sites, and the facility is so big with kind of almost like different levels. What was it before? Was it an yeah. old thoroughbred farm?
That I do not know. The only time I've ever actually done Ocala before now was when it was at the old facility, went in to try some horses. So when we showed up, you know, 3 years ago when it was my first time there, it was like, wow, this is completely different.
Yeah.
I think he's done a fantastic job. I mean, it must have been a thoroughbred farm because they have a giant track kind of placed right in the middle of the whole facility. So it's kind of fun. You know, if you want to get your horses quiet, you can loop around the track down. There's lots of places to go to roam through the paddocks if you want to kind of trail ride your horses. So,
which is so nice. I love Wellington, but like there will be no trail riding unless you're off grounds.
Right.
If you're there, right. like exactly. it's so small. It's kind of outrageous.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's more, I think, for the young horses. And if you're going to be there for a longer time, I would like that. I would definitely shoot up there a couple weeks. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, for sure to bring horses up. Yes.
Yeah, we come check you out. Well, thanks so much for checking
for sure.
in with us, Caitlin. It's awesome to hear about this
Thank
program.
You so much.
It's a great job, and you're just doing so competitively well out there. I'm sure they're very happy to have you up there at Canterbury Farm.
It's very exciting. I'm ready for next year, 2016. I think will be a fantastic year for us, and I'm very excited to work with you and the shirt line, and you know, start getting your name a little bit out here in the Midwest a little bit too, which will be really fun.
Oh, we love that for sure. You're the perfect poster girl.
Thank you.
Well, we'll check in with you soon. Stay warm up there, and we'll see you in Florida.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
you guys,
Caitlin.
Very much for having me.
Bye.
You know, I think
Bye.
That Emily, the secret to her success is a heated indoor. That's ridiculous. The heated barn, all that. Like, gosh, I mean, I lived up in the north, and I made it one winter, and I lived in like Northeast Ohio, and I wanted to die. And there was an indoor. But it wasn't a heated situation at all. And the picking snow out of the hooves.
Oh, out of the hooves. So you're like sweating, you know?
Yeah.
And we actually, I was up here when I was a kid, I grew up in New York, and I liked it, you know, chasing metal final points and all this stuff, like freezing before I went to Florida when I was like, a little kid. And then as an adult for 2 years, I did stay up here when I moved my business back to New York. I'd been in Texas for 6 years, and I worked at a thoroughbred farm that had a quarter mile indoor track, which was not heated and was maybe the scariest thing in creation, because there were only like, it was like a concrete tunnel, and there were only like, I think, two or three doors where you could get out into the stalls, which bordered the track on the outside. Like if you came off one of those horses, you were running to the next door because they're da, 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 coming around.
Oh
the
my
back.
Gosh. Yeah, crazy. I've never seen anything like that. That is crazy. Like run, you fell off. You're limping to get out of the way. Oh my gosh.
You got forehead coming back around the track.
Do you ever look at your life and go like back when you were younger and go, oh my God, how did I survive? Like, how did I survive that point in my life?
And like, why did I like make these business decisions? Sure. Yeah. I'm going to go ride racehorses in the dead of winter in New York. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It was poor decision-making skills, but I did survive, and here I am.
Well, I bet our next guest has never done anything crazy.
I bet he has.
Well, why don't you introduce Andrew?
We have our last but not least fabulous guest is the very successful Andrew Philbrick from Hunter Farms, New Jersey. You may remember him from a previous episode on his now very large project of Princeton Show Jumping. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
This is great. I was so happy we were able to connect and have you back on, because you really are in the know on the American Young Jumper situation. And I think we should definitely shed some light on the young jumpers, the breeding, all of it.
I have a real passion for that. I have young horses that I've bred myself, and obviously we have a lot of young jumper competitions at our place, and we obviously have the Princeton Show Jumping Young Jumper Championships every fall. We're now into our third season. So it means a lot to me.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, that's the future of the sport. And you don't always, now there's a little bit, I think, a turning of the tide. People are getting more interested, would you say? Is it getting a little bit more popular?
There isn't any doubt that it's improving. I think that the efforts over the years of the Jumper Futurity has tried to concentrate our efforts and make some strides into making it worth it. And a lot of the horse shows have embraced those classes and their regional championships, both California, the Midwest, and on the East Coast, have helped. But I guess the standard is what they do in Europe, and we are, for sure, at least 20 years behind them, maybe more.
Which is so crazy to me. I mean, it's like, where it just seems that should go hand in hand. Even as riders, don't you think it's better, it improves your skill to ride young horses?
I do. I mean, if we look back really historically, the post-war era is when the breeding programs in Europe really took off. And really in the, you know, when I was a little kid, I'm happy to say, in the 70s, you know, the United States was really a premier equestrian power, and countries like Holland and France really weren't. But they were huge into breeding. And then as we got into the 70s and early 80s, we were so economically powerful that we were able to go there and buy the best horses, including the best young horses, and we really sort of missed the boat on having this huge country of ours with all our natural resources actually breeding and promoting young horses. You know, in Europe, most of the major equestrian powers that have big breeding programs have national championships for young horses. The biggest horse show in Sweden, for instance, which a lot of people don't focus on Sweden as being a big breeding country, but they're a huge breeding country, and they've bred and bred and bred and have a big championships during their biggest outdoor outdoor show, Falsterbo, in the summer. And they will have 3 days of young horse championships with the horses going in the main international ring, 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds. And it's a huge deal. I mean, a lot more people know about the German Young Horse Championships at their federation in Warendorf. There's a giant Young Horse Championship, obviously, in France, in Fontainebleau, that have been going on 30, 40 years. And, of course, over the last, it's got to be 10 years now, the FEI has sanctioned the Zangerzijde, which is its own independent breeding association, World Young Horse Championships every fall in Belgium. And that's a giant business in Europe, breeding those horses, bringing them along, taking them to regional horse shows, getting them qualified, going to the finals, selling horses at the finals. There are horses I know personally, about a 5-year-old last year, that got sold at the finals, and it was 400,000 euros. I mean, that boggles my mind, but it also makes an incentive for people who scratch their heads, you know, every spring and say, gosh, should I breed this good jumping mare that's no longer in the sport, and who should I breed her to?
Oh, for sure. And now I wonder, kind of going through the chronology here of the timeline, in our country, we were riding the American Thoroughbred when they were breeding Warmbloods.
You're absolutely right, and we depended on that. And, of course, horses like Michael Matz's Jet Run, Lisa's horse for the moment, I mean, these were off-the-track Thoroughbreds. And Gem Twist wasn't off the track, but he was 100% Thoroughbred. And we really did have that as a source. And as the racing world changed and we lost access to sound young horses for jumping, there's a little change there now happening, but it's very recent. You know, and the warm blood really became the center of attention. We never made that jump. Excuse me. You make a very good point. You know, we had that as a resource, and as the sport changed, we really didn't automatically start breeding warmbloods on a level, and as the thoroughbreds became less available, there was a big hole there.
For sure. And then that's like what you're saying, why we're so far behind. That's almost that time bracket.
We really are far behind, and are, you know, the way for us to do that. I mean, there's every reason in the world why we want breeding and young horse training and competition in the United States. You know, it makes our whole pie of competing horses and horses in training to compete bigger. That's better for everyone. That's better for the sport on every level. You think about it, a guy like Ken Farrington is now the leading American rider in most metrics, and he really did start bringing young horses to the regional championships. Before he had Grand Prix horses, Kent was riding lots of young horses. And that was an opportunity that came his way, gave him more exposure, and in Kent's case, the rest is history. But I submit to you that our top-level elite riders are often pulled away to Europe in the summer or up to Spruce Meadows, and the more and more young horses that are in training give an opportunity to that next tier young competitive rider coming along that gets a chance to be able to get into those bigger shows, ride those young horses, maybe ride around the main ring in Kentucky, maybe ride around the main ring in Southampton. That's a great opportunity. And there's such a huge trickle down. I mean, boarding stables collect more board. Horse shows get more entries. The vets have more clients. The farriers have more clients. There are more grooms that can be employed. Every single thing in the business is enhanced by enhancing young horse breeding and training and competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I sort of my thought, my question, and maybe this it, you know, is comparable, but if somebody, you know, there's a lot of people, it's inexpensive, they want to go over and buy beautiful papered foals, leave them over for a year or two, and then ship them home when they're already under tack at three. I mean, I guess you kind of miss out on those first couple of years of development, and then the jobs, the businesses, all of this. I guess it's sort of maybe, I don't know, how do you feel about that? Breeding is still more important than buying young and importing.
Well, there's both sides of that. Breeding at this point in the United States is a bit of a thankless job and a very difficult way to look into the future and get a return on your investment because we don't yet really have a marketplace. I'm sure that you know when you go to buy young horses in Europe, if you go to any of the elite sales now with 4 and 5 year old horses, the prices are unbelievable. The same thing though, if someone asks you, let's say for instance, the equivalent of 75,000 euros for a 5 year old in this country, it's very difficult to sell a horse of that value. And yet you go to Europe and people do it every single day. So we lag behind. It's hard to say to people, gosh, you should be breeding more horses, when there isn't enough excitement, there isn't enough of a venue, there isn't enough of a marketplace for those horses. But we're getting better. And these elite horse shows, these championships, if we can make more, basically more production, you know, better on every level for young horses, more exposure to the main ring, more exposure to the elite course designers, better presentations, better awards, awarding breeders for producing these horses. All of these incentives help for us to build up the young horses, and that's really what's missing is the marketplace and the venue. We'll get more horses bred in the United States if you can show a path to the owners to be able to get somewhere with their young horses.
Yeah, no, absolutely, for sure, because it's, I mean, in this country, there's a percentage of people that will shop young horses, but it doesn't seem that high, and so the prices are not so high. You've really got to wait until you're 5, 6, 7 to have any sort of traction, and that is sort of discouraging for a breeder that's putting all of that capital in, all, you know, it's blood, sweat, and tears. It is a very hard job, and I think that's it. You got it. It's trying to encourage these people, the breeders that are out there doing it at that younger age.
You know, and there's a whole social aspect in Europe. If you go to Zangerzijde, that is a perfect example. That's the World Breeding Championships in Belgium at Leon Melchior's farm. And he has a big competition venue. He has a lot of big events there, but he has one big event in the fall exclusively for young horses. And that's a great example of what we need. We need a meeting of business and sport, and it's got to involve all of that: social life, business, sport, sponsorship, breeders. If a breeder goes to Zangerzijde and sits in the VIP and chats with other breeders, other business people, other horse professionals, there's a party atmosphere, and he sits there and his young horse comes in the ring and jumps spectacularly well in that venue, that's a huge incentive to people to want to be there. They know their horses are getting exposure. They know if they produce something good, they're going to get a lot of exposure. It's going to affect the value of these horses. It's going to affect, frankly, their social life. There's a great meeting in Europe that gets people exciting. Often in the United States, when you have young horse classes and there's three or four in the class, and it's out in ring seven at a big show, and it's got a secondary course designer, honestly, the breeders don't get anything out of that. The owners don't get anything out of that. And you, if you don't have situations where these horses are actually the center of attention, like the Grand Prix horses, everybody knows what it's like to sit in the VIP in Wellington on a Saturday night and watch their horse win ribbons in the main ring. There's prize money, there's social standing, there's fun. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's a bar. You know, it's excitement. We got to bring that to the young horses. If we don't, they'll continue to languish.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. And now what, I mean, I've been over to some of these auctions and seen some of these farms, and it's night and day. It's like, I mean, it's not happening here. But how do we do that? Like, what role does today the USHJA or the USCF play in helping us take these steps?
Well, it's a complicated balance because for instance, in Germany, the Young Horse Championships are run at Warendorf. And they've been running championships at Warendorf literally since the war. I mean, they know how to do it. It's got a lot of prestige. It's very, very, very well done. But these other championships, like Zangerzijde, is done by an independent guy. He's not connected. He's affiliated with the FEI, but he runs it as a person who runs competitions. And the horse show in Falsterbo runs the Young Horse Championships for the Swedish Federation, and that's also run professionally by a horse show. You know, I'm on the fence because I really believe that the USHJA and the USEF have a role to play, but I think their role is not in running events. I'm very leery of the affiliate or the federation running events. I don't think it's their job. I don't think they're necessarily good at it. And it brings to mind when the United States Equestrian Team decided to run horse shows at Gladstone. And I told them at the time I thought it was a terrible distraction from their real job of mounting teams and sending people to world championships and the Olympics. Well, they decided they wanted to run a horse show. And frankly, it was sad. It was badly run. It was bad footing. And ultimately, in a very short time, two or three seasons, the last time they ran a $100,000 Grand Prix there, they got less than 15 entries. So that example is out there for us that was a disaster. So we have horse show management in this country, and it clearly runs the gambit. It runs from very professional to not so great, but we need to have the federations promoting, keeping records, having regulations, encouraging top course design, all the things that the affiliate in the federation should be doing, should be very active in encouraging young horse development. At the moment, there's chatter, when I go to the convention about young horses. There are committees for young horses. There are a few individuals that are very dedicated to developing young horses. But for instance, the Futurity has been run by Julie Winkle and Linda Allen for all these years, and it's not affiliated with, I mean, I think everybody thinks that's a federation program, and it's not. That's a nonprofit that they run that program and encourage those finals and keep those points and register those horses all on their own, and they're not connected to the federation. So I think the federation and the affiliate have roles to play. I think they could expand their role, but I don't think the role for them is to run a young horse championship. I'm not even sure that it's their job to necessarily license a young horse championship, because my experience is when they license something, like, for instance, the finals for the Hunter Derbies, the costs skyrocket. And I don't love that. When, you know, we don't have we haven't had a show jumping championship from the USEF since there was one at Saugerties. It must have been 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, maybe more. And the reason is horse shows don't sign up for that because it's an exclusive thing owned by the federation. And in order to please the federation's parameters, they add in, you got to have all the federation employees there. You got to transport, you got to put them in hotels. You got to do all these things that drive the cost up for the competitors. So I'm leery. I want them involved as their role in the regulating authority and their promotional abilities and their ability to perhaps bring sponsors. But often when the federation and the affiliate bring sponsors, they retain the sponsor. The sponsor doesn't go out and share the wealth with the exhibitors and with the horse show managers that are providing the venues.
Well, I have to say, before we run out of time, you guys have to check Andrew's website out, this PrincetonShowJumping.com, because he has managed to do a fantastic Young Jumper Finals Championship Series. It's so great. I got to watch it this year, participated in a few of the earlier classes. My horse was a little too green to continue, but he was great, and it was so fun to feel. It really does feel like Europe. Your shows are like that. So I want to congratulate you on those, and you guys check it out. If you can attend, even spectate, there's a live stream, PrincetonShowJumping.com. Thank you so much, Andrew, for chatting with us. This was so much knowledge. I really, really appreciate it. I know you're very busy.
Thank you, guys. Absolutely. Love being on your show. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Andrew.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Not at all. All the best.
Bye. My gosh, I could listen to that guy Emily, for another hour. He's just so interesting. But we've run out of time as usual for the show, and I know you need to get there and clip that black stallion of yours and start to sweat a little bit in the warmer weather down there. Hopefully it cools off just a little bit for you, and it's been awesome being on the show with you.
I know, it's great. I do. I love our monthly chat. It's awesome.
Fantastic. I do too. So anyway, you guys, thank you so much to S Equestrian for sponsoring today's show and Five Star Bridles. Check them out, fivestarbridles.com. And S Equestrian is ECEEquestrianCo.com. Check out these gorgeous show coats. You will not regret it. You guys, and Emily, again, thank you so much for being on the show today and for making us look nice in the dressage ring, even though you didn't need to or recognize your own coat.
You did look great. I know. I was like, wow, she looks sharp. She's so dressagey.
I even braided my Mustang. I mean, come on.
It's pretty epic. I love that. It's like the best photo ever. Well, good luck with all your riding too. We'll talk soon.
All right. Talk to you soon, Emily. Thank you very much. Everybody have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld. And Emily, what's your sign off?
EssEquestrianCo.com.
That's it.